Welcome back to another episode of Peter's Proffer from the Lawyer You Know. And today we're going to dive in and discuss some of President Biden's newest executive orders. We're going to ask the questions of what does this executive order actually say? How will it affect the citizens of the United States of America? And do we like it? Do we think it's actually going to change anything for the better? Or is it just posturing? Is it just a symbol? Is it not really going to change anything? So we're going to go through that. I've got my dad, George Tragos, on the podcast today. We're going to go through some of these executive orders. We're going to do some social media posts to get some feedback from you guys to see how you feel about these executive orders. Look through the list. It's vast. We're going to pick 8 or 9 of our favorite ones and go through them and tell you our thoughts. So hopefully you guys enjoy this episode. If you have any content you want to hear, reach out to us on social media at Tragos Law. Don't forget to like and subscribe to this podcast and our YouTube channel, which is known as The Lawyer You Know, because we love to put out content you guys want to hear. We want to be educational. We want to benefit the public. We want you guys to know what your rights are so you know how to walk in everyday life and not get taken advantage of by anybody. So that's why we're here. Hopefully you guys enjoy this episode. All right, so the first executive order we're going to talk about today, and we're just going to summarize these. If you want to look up what the entirety of the executive order says, you can Google that and find all the language and verbiage about it. But we're going to just summarize some of them, talk about what they say and what it actually means. So the first executive order, we're going to kind of take a couple in combination here, is the executive orders rejoining the Paris Agreement and the World Health Organization. So, Dad, what do these executive orders actually say, and what's the purpose of them?
Well, that executive order dealing with that really is, this is a lot of symbolism. It's not a binding agreement. It's not like a contract or a treaty where you have to go to the Senate and get it approved and it becomes the law of the land. This is an aspirational agreement between the different governments that signed it, that as a certain year, they're going to reduce carbon emissions by a certain percentage, and there's no penalty if they don't. They're just going to try. And, you know, frankly, the studies have shown that the United States right now, with or without the agreement, is doing better than a majority of the countries in the world as far as reducing carbon emissions.
And how is this executive order actually going to affect the citizens of our country?
Well, the executive order itself isn't, but it's a psychological thing. When you go for legislation, you're going to say, look, the whole world has agreed to reduce it by this and that, so we need to have some laws, some statutes. For instance, coal mines or petroleum production, those kinds of things are going to have to be reduced because we're going to burn less fuel and the cars are going to have to become more efficient. So it has a trickle-down effect, but the actual agreement itself is just aspirational. And when President Trump got out of the agreement, it still didn't mean that we didn't reduce carbon emissions.
It was just as much posturing, basically.
Yes.
Both presidents postured by using these organizations and these agreements to try to make their followers happy, basically.
Right, because on one hand, Trump is saying, you know, we're not going to be bound and have to kiss up to these foreign countries.
And Biden says we want to work nicely with everybody, and yeah, it's all similar posturing from both sides, but it shouldn't change our world or our life that much.
It probably won't, except we do know, I think philosophically, President Biden is really into the climate change more than President Trump. So I think we'll see a lot of legislation and other things happen that are going to affect the climate. So this is just symbolism to begin the process.
Okay, and how do we feel about these executive orders? Do we like them, not like them, and why?
Are we talking about this particular one?
Yeah, just these two with the Paris Agreement and the World Health Organization.
I don't like it only because I hate giving foreign countries the ability to point the finger at us should we not make the particular goal. And I don't think that, you know, we should be bound by them. And I think it's a public relations problem. And I think it was easier not to be bound by it. But if we make the goal, no one is going to complain about it.
Right. All right. The next executive order, pausing student loan payment and interest. So this is the one where Biden basically said that he's going to pause all student loan payments, keeping the interest rate at 0% because there are too many Americans struggling to pay for basic necessities and struggling to provide for their families, and they should not be forced to choose between paying their student loans and putting food on the table. So Let's talk about how this executive order actually affects the citizens of the United States.
Well, it'll have a big effect on those citizens that have student loans. I think they said 22 million, I think it's something like that, a number that I saw. So it's going to have a big effect on them, but only in the short run, because eventually they're going to have to pay their student loans. But just right now, they're not going to have to. Under Biden's order, the interest will not accrue. So the fact that they may have 6 months of no payments, they're not going to have an increased payment because of interest rates, because the interest rate is going to be zero.
Right. Usually if you don't make payments on a loan, you're building interest over all that time and you end up owing a lot more money at the end. That's not going to happen here.
But here's another interesting quirk about this is in March of 2020, President Trump signed the same type of order so that people didn't have to pay their student loans from March on.
Right.
So this is an extension. Basically.
And this is more of a coronavirus executive order, I think, than it is an Elizabeth Warren eliminating all of student loan debt, right?
Right. And there's a lot of questions that go along with this. There is a side issue where President Biden talked about loan forgiveness and how he may forgive $10,000 of student loans.
Right.
There's also another side issue. We have a forgiveness program already in the United States where if you work for a government agency, let's say for 10 years,
mm-hmm,
and do 120 payments, all right, does this extend the 120 payments or are we included in this suspension for the 120 payments? You know, we don't know how that's going to be.
That was confusing. So if you work for the government job and make payments, even if they're small payments, your entirety of your debt gets forgiven at the end of that 10 years. Right. So that's what you meant by that loan forgiveness. So you're saying how will this and future loan forgiveness affect that loan forgiveness?
Right. Or and people can do this. You can still make loan payments during this period of time when you're not required to.
Right.
And that would count toward your eventual loan forgiveness program.
Right. So there's a lot of kind of moving parts with this. So that's how it's going to affect the citizens of the United States. It's going to help anybody that has student loans. It's going to hurt the banks and the financial institutions that gave out the loans, I guess. Not many people care about them. But what do you think as far as, do you like this executive order? Do you think it serves a proper purpose? Do you think it creates a slippery slope? I do want to talk about slippery slopes on some of these because a lot of these may be okay in themselves, but may create a slippery slope issue, meaning further digging into this hole could be bad in the future.
Well, there's a lot of pros and cons to this. One is, yes, it helps people who need money now to put food on the table or maybe pay credit card debt, something like that, and it certainly will help them. However, they do still have to make these payments. Eventually, they have to pay the loan back. So maybe when this is all over and they have to start paying it back, the economy may not be strong then, and they may still need some additional forgiveness. So we've got a situation of we don't know what it's going to be like or how long. I think this right now is through September of 2021. We don't know if it's going to have to be extended. And you're right. There are some banks and institutions that this is really going to hurt.
So basically, I like this one. I mean, I think as far as it goes with the coronavirus impact, I like that they're pausing them. They're pausing the interest. They're letting people continue to work. It's hard to work still for a lot of people in America because of the virus, because of the pandemic. And hopefully in September, it'll all be behind us, even though I doubt it. But let's hope it's all behind us. And then I would probably have a different feeling about just forgiving all student loan debt. I don't see how that's possible. I think you can create some forgiveness programs like we already have. But I think as far as right now, being able to pause your payments or zero interest, not compounding or hurting you in the future, I'm with this executive order for the time being, especially because of the pandemic. All right. Next executive order. The executive order supporting the reopening and continued operations of schools. So this is a really big one. A lot of people, and there's a couple executive orders in here that we'll talk about, a lot of people were worried that Biden was going to become president and immediately shut down the country, shut down schools, shut down travel, shut down restaurants, shut down everything. Everybody's got to wear a mask everywhere. We'll get to that one. So what did the executive order about continuing to try to reopen schools properly and safely? What does this order actually say?
Well, first, the order recognizes that the federal government cannot order states to open their schools or close their schools. You know, maybe they could, but in this order, he's kind of indicating, look, the federal government can't do that. We have to be aspirational. We have to guide. So this order really provides planning. It goes along with the package that they're going to do in the legislature and in Congress, making money available to schools to be able to stay open during this pandemic.
Hundreds of billions of dollars.
Right. So it goes along with that, but it really directs federal agencies to help in the planning and to give guidance to schools on how to open, how to stay open, and how to stay open safely. It does recognize, which is, I think, very important. Again, a lot of this is aspirational, but it does recognize that students do not have as great a risk in the coronavirus or the COVID-19 situation as adults do. So, and they are generally safer.
So I think that some of the important things that are actually in this executive order is Biden wants to improve internet connectivity in areas where it's poor, where they're still doing remote school. He wants to ramp up testing, vaccines, and more funding to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars. And he may even want to tap into the disaster relief funds. So he wants to put money and planning and help behind this executive order to try to get remote school to be in a better position and to try to push towards in-person school, because I think everybody is pretty much coming to the agreement at this point that in-person school is necessary and better for kids. There's some stats that say that if we do stay remote, students are going to lose almost an entire year of certain subjects such as mathematics. So they're going to be an entire year behind where they should be if we stay in this remote situation, and Biden's trying to do everything he can, according to this executive order, to get us back to better remote school or in-person school.
Well, and again, he recognizes he's going to have to hand the money to some local, either a state or a county, whatever the school system has set up, and they're the ones that are going to be spending the money. This is not universally accepted, though. Teachers, for instance, some teachers aren't real happy about this, because although children seem to be very safe and children have to seem to be able to survive pretty easily in the virus, teachers are still older. And they still may catch it from the students, and they still may have a problem.
And they're trying to get vaccines and considering them frontline essential workers and trying to push vaccines for all the teachers that want them. So this executive order, personally, I like this order. I'm glad that he's doing things like this. This was a fear of people that didn't vote for him. I'm glad that he is not making some of those people's fears realized, and that he is pushing to open schools. He is pushing to make school better. He's not looking like he's going to shut down the country right now. So that's good. And people can say whatever they want about flip-flopping. It's good that he's doing this, in my opinion. I like this order. How do you feel about it?
I like the order. I like the fact that he is not directing local schools to do specific things.
Right. And I think that's good. That's important, because we have to keep that balance between state and federal government and that separation. Okay. Next is the executive order for wearing masks on federal property. This is another one that a lot of people were worried about. Is Biden going to force a mask mandate nationally, force all the states to do this? Are we going to all be wearing masks inside and out, no matter what we're doing at all times, children and adults alike? That was the fear mongering that was going on. He's not doing that, at least yet. We can talk about whether this is part of that slippery slope argument, but this one literally just says you have to wear a mask on in federal buildings and on federal land. And he wants the states to follow suit, but he's not forcing them to, at least at this point. If whether or not he can is a different discussion, which I think we've discussed in other podcasts. But what do you think about how this executive order would actually affect the citizens of the U.S.?
Well, I think this goes along with the 100 days where he wants the whole country to wear masks for 100 days. This only applies to federal land, because that was his authority as the president. It will affect, I think, people who go to national parks more than anything else, because you already have to wear in federal buildings, you have to wear masks as it is.
Exactly.
And normally you're thought that, look, if I'm outside, I don't have to wear a mask. But now if you go to a park, a federal park, you go to Yosemite, let's say, while you're walking around Yosemite, you have to wear a mask under this rule. That's where it's going to change people, because I think, again, people always thought outdoors was a kind of a mask-free zone.
Right. And I think that, you know, how this is going to affect people, we already kind of talked about, it's just going to affect on federal land, because in federal buildings, that was already the case. Inside most businesses, that's already the case. Do we like this executive order? I mean, generally, I think I'm going to say no. I'm not trying to extend the mask mandate to being outside as well. That's just kind of an extra annoyance and doesn't really make sense to me if we're following the science. The science doesn't say that's necessary, especially if you can have social distancing. I just don't like this for the slippery slope argument. He's going to do this, or we're going to try to continue to extend it. But at the same time, I do like that at least he didn't try to overreach with this executive order, as a lot of people feared. So I don't like this one, but it's not as bad as it could have been.
Right. Again, it's to me, it's kind of just adding something on it for optics that I don't think it really is going to have a big impact on the country.
Okay. So next up is the executive order banning discrimination on the base of gender identity or sexual orientation. So this is something that, you know, we've dealt with in the past in our employment cases, talking about whether you can discriminate somebody based on race, sex. Now we have sexual orientation or gender identity added to the list. You can't discriminate based on disability, things like that. It's basically going to be put into a protected class, like all of those other things. So how is this going to affect the citizens of the U.S.?
Well, I think there, again, this is a philosophical difference between President Trump and President Biden of how they looked at this. President Biden now wants stricter enforcement within federal agencies and within the federal acts. We have like the Civil Rights Act, the Title IX Education, the Fair Housing Act, Affordable Care Act. All of those acts have provisions in them for gender identity and for the civil rights of individuals. The Bostic case made sure, at least by that decision, that when you're talking about sex, you're also talking about sexual identity or sexual preference. So he is making sure that federal agencies, when they're enforcing the federal acts, use the Bostic case strictly to make sure that, again, fair housing or the Affordable Care Act, all of those laws are enforced in order to protect the LGBT community. Estimated right now to be about 11 million people or adults in the United States.
Yeah, and I think as far as do we like this one or not like this one, from my perspective, I don't think people should be discriminated against based on their sexual orientation or even gender identity. So I'm with it as far as anti-discrimination. I don't think people should be discriminated against for anything. But I do see a slippery slope argument with this because there are certain institutions that it doesn't make sense to hire certain people, or if you don't hire somebody and you have a legitimate reason, like they're not going to be a good fit or they can't do the job that you want them to do, I don't like something that's harder to prove as a reason for discrimination to be now. I mean, you may not even know what someone's sexual orientation or gender identity is. And if you don't hire them or you fire them and they come back and say it was because of their sexual orientation or gender identity, that's a hard one for me. And that's something that's hard to prove or disprove. So I don't like things like that. It's a little less black and white and a little harder to prove. And those things are sometimes difficult for me in a slippery slope argument type. And then legally speaking, Dad, why don't you talk about what our other objections to this type of an executive order are?
Philosophically, I have a problem with the Bostic case. Not because I might have disagreed with what they said, whether it is or isn't.
Because we agree, you shouldn't not hire somebody to work at our law firm because they're gay or whatever their gender identity may be.
Yeah, I don't disagree maybe with their reasoning. My problem with the Bostic case is it's an example of how the courts are becoming a Congress or legislature. When the Civil Rights Act was passed, and they said sex in the Civil Rights Act, I'm sure no one raised the LGBT community or no one talked about whether it's included in sex or not. Sex was the wording in the statute when they passed it
male
in 1964.
Female. Right, and it meant male and female. You can't discriminate based on male and female.
That was the discussion. And now it's been expanded by Bostic. They put words there that weren't there before. So they legislated. If Congress wants to pass a law that says that, go for it. But I don't think that the courts should be able to change the language or the meaning of the statute according to the way it was written.
Or the executive branch, like Biden's doing here with the executive order. So that's what you're saying, too.
Like, right.
So, and just to break it down a little bit more for a layperson, if you may not be following, the legislative branch is that we have separation of powers and a balance of powers in America. The legislative branch is the branch that writes the law. The judicial branch interprets it, the executive branch executes it. So the executive branch and the judicial branch are not the branches that are supposed to be writing these laws that they are then interpreting and executing. But if you look at what we have here, Congress, the legislature, wrote a law. The judicial branch is now adding to it, meaning writing their own part of this law, and Biden is now writing it in as an executive order also, even though, you know, they can do, obviously the president, the executive can do executive orders, he's kind of legislating here along with the judicial branch and changing the laws that Congress wrote. That's more of a philosophical legal argument that we have. This executive order or anything else that follows this type of philosophy, like we're saying, where the judicial branch just makes things up on its own. All right. That was a long explanation, probably more than into the weeds than people cared about. Let's move on to the next one, the proclamation reinstating COVID-19 travel restrictions. So this is basically you got to mask up in all modes of domestic transportation and international airports, planes, trains, all that stuff. You got to wear the mask and there are some travel restrictions. So we're going to answer the question of how does this affect U.S. citizens right now?
Well, U.S. citizens, it has almost no effect on them. This is strictly a non-citizen executive order saying that non-citizens within 3 days of coming to this country must have a negative COVID-19 test. But again, we're not talking about citizens. If you're in Europe and coming back, you don't need that.
All right. And to answer the question of do we like this one or not, we like aspects of it, maybe not other aspects. Wearing a mask on a plane is miserable. I understand why we have to do it right now. But I like the international non-citizens, you know, having to have the negative COVID test so that we're not bringing it over from other countries, which was probably a problem at the beginning of the pandemic.
Right. And that's one of the things everybody complained about is should we have shut the borders of our country down earlier than we did?
All right. The next executive order, quote unquote, the Buy American agenda. What does this executive order say?
Well, this executive order is another expansion of previous executive orders. President Trump and President Obama have all issued orders trying to make federal agencies buy more American products. And they've made it harder and harder for foreign products to come into the American pipeline through the American agencies. This expands it, makes it even tougher for non-American countries to produce products that federal agencies buy. For instance, we all know you buy a car. Certain percentage of that car, odds are, have been made in a foreign country.
Always.
Yes. Well, now it says if you're going to buy
usually
a car.
China. Yeah.
But now... If the government has to have a certain percentage, has to definitely be an American made before they can buy the product. They can't slip it in the back door and made it a component because that component, even if it's made in a foreign country, cannot dominate the production.
And how this affects the U.S. citizens is just it's better for U.S. companies. It's better for the United States. It's better for the economy. It's better for us as a whole. It's pretty much good for everybody. And we like this one. I mean, there's nothing really that I don't like about this executive order.
It does recognize something, though, in the order. It does recognize that it may be more expensive. They give the agencies the priority to buy a more expensive product if it complies with the Buy American.
And we all know that. I mean, supporting local businesses, supporting American businesses, rather than doing things online or ordering it from China, is usually expensive to the everyday person. So it's going to be for the federal government as well. It's just going to be more expensive to do things here than to outsource them overseas because they don't have the same labor laws we do. They don't have the same restrictions and protections that we do. So it's more expensive process to do it the American way. But we want to support that and support our economy.
And President Biden also limited the number of waivers and exemptions.
Which is
good. That's been a big loophole, they call it, in a lot of this stuff. So he's limited that as well.
All right. The next one, which I find really interesting to get your take on, is the executive order to end reliance on private prisons. So what does this one say?
Well, this one says that the government is not going to contract or recontract or renew contracts with private companies to run prisons. This one is probably the biggest bunch of hooey.
Yeah, and that's really funny. So
I tell you.
When you say biggest bunch of hooey, you mean it's going to have no effect at all.
Well, you have 152,000 federal prisoners. 14,000 are in private prisons, number one. Number two,
less than 10%.
Right, I have been to private prisons. I've had clients in private prisons. Most of the time, the clients like the private prisons better than they like the government prisons.
Because they're nicer, right? They're higher quality.
They are. They're nicer. They're higher quality. The guards are usually not quite wrapped so tight. So I've had clients complain about being transferred from the private prisons to the public prisons. But, 14,000, what percentage of the prison population,
So the positive and negative of this that I've read, I thought that some of the articles and research that I've done and seen is this would help the racial inequality. This would help some of that, some of the bias of throwing more people, which happen to be more minorities, in prison because these prisons are for profit and there's issues with that. And I don't like the idea of a for-profit prison, right? I don't like that. But they also said that this absolutely does nothing to change. The more I research, it does nothing to change the racial inequality. There's no bigger percentage in private prisons. It doesn't change the outcomes of these cases or how minorities are treated throughout the criminal process. So at that point, it's like, I don't even know what we're doing. So it seemed more like symbolism than anything else, because everything I read is this is not going to change anything. Everybody on both sides of the aisle, Democrats and Republicans kind of think this isn't going to change anything.
There's been no studies showing that there's any racial problems because it's a private versus a public prison.
Right. I mean, I do think that in my head, I can understand the logical connection that a for-profit prison is going to want more people to go to prison. So, you know, everybody's seen movies or shows where the judges are getting paid off by the prisons and throwing more people in prison than they should on cases where they shouldn't. I think there's even some real life examples of that. So I'd like to get rid of that, you know, percentage, but it is such a small percentage of people going to prison. But if it's, you know, your family member and it's just one, then that's enough. But, you know, so getting rid of this, I guess, is an okay thing. But I also always thought clients liked private prisons better. So that's the negative aspect of it. Do we care as much where people are going to prison if they like it? I guess, you know, some people would disagree on that. So overall, I'm going to say I don't like this one just because I don't like symbolism. I like for these executive orders to actually make a good impact, and I don't think this one does much. How do you feel about it?
Well, I don't like it because, first off, people are going to lose their jobs. There's going to be an economic impact. These private prisons, a lot of times, are in small communities. So if the private prison shuts down, that's the biggest employer in that community. So the economic impact just doesn't seem like it's worth it for the symbolism they're trying to throw out there.
And it's like you still have to do something with these 14,000 prisoners. Sure. Now, even though it's a small percentage, we're going to pack the prisoners more during a pandemic. I don't know how quickly this is going to get put into practice. But, you know, I guess there's some issues with that as well. I don't have super strong feelings on this one.
Well, most of what we're talking about here, it takes a good at least 45 days for the implementation. And also, President Biden has issued an order that any rules from the past that haven't been finalized are not going to be finalized for 60 days to allow a review of the rule.
Which leads us right into the last one we're going to discuss, which is a part of an executive order talking about the freeze on the rules requiring discounts on insulin and other drugs for low-income patients. So this is exactly what you're talking about. There are some rules that Biden has basically said, we're going to pause this for 60 days so we can review this rule to see if it needs to be changed, if it needs to be just totally thrown out altogether, or if maybe we will implement it. So the question on this one is, when we get into how it's going to affect the United States and what this rule actually says, let's talk about what the arguments are on both sides specifically for this rule.
This was a rule or an executive order signed by President Trump before he left office, but was not going to be effective until after President Biden takes office. So it falls in that 60-day window for study. And what it does is, if you're a health clinic and you have a federal grant program, the 330E program, and you get money from the government, but you're also part of the 340B program, which means the pharmaceutical company has to reduce the price they sell you insulin for. So you get a reduced insulin price, and you get a federal grant giving you money. If you're in that group, then if you have someone who's in the poverty level that needs insulin, you cannot make a profit on the sale. So you have to sell it to them for exactly the price you got it from the pharmaceutical company.
So in the arguments on both sides of this are kind of how it's going to affect the citizens. And that is, if you're low income, obviously it's rough that Biden has paused this because now insulin's going to be more expensive for you. But if you're somebody who's not quote unquote low income, but may not be high income, it makes insulin more affordable because they're saying what they were going to do is make the insulin everybody else is buying way more expensive. And then it could become cost preclusive for just a different group of people. And the government's arbitrarily picking low income people to give it to at a cheaper price than middle class or lower middle class or whatever it may be.
And these clinics are saying, we have to have, you know, we have overhead, we have employees to pay. We can't sell this without making some profit.
Because, I mean, if you think about any product you sell, right? If you pay $30 to buy something and you sell it for $30, it's not a wash because you had to pay an employee to handle it, to, you know, give it, to check it out, to take payment, to hand it off, to deliver it, whatever it may be. There are overhead costs with every transaction that you do. So these hospitals would be losing money. Not that I feel bad for them, but they would be losing money on all of these transactions. So I think limiting how much you can make on them may be better than selling them for exactly what you paid for them.
And another factor is the price of insulin has skyrocketed. I think in the last 10 years, it's gone up 300% or some just phenomenal number. And so that's making it really tougher, because insulin is not one of these things that you can just say, well, I think I'll take it or I think I won't take
it. Right, you need it.
You have to take it.
Right.
And it's required, like eating or like drinking and breathing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, low-income people, if they don't take that insulin, they're going to die.
Right. And so I think that's important. I think, do we like this? First, I want to talk about some people saying, oh, Biden said he was going to lower the price of drugs. And, you know, he's flip-flopping on that. He's not doing it. He's actually raising the price of insulin. That's not actually true. He's not raising the price, but he is pausing a discounted price. So whether or not you consider that raising the price of insulin is up to you. And I think it's important to know that he hasn't totally thrown out Trump's order, or whatever this is, to make these discounts. He's reviewing it and may still do it. We don't know. As we've already talked about, some of these executive orders are totally new. Some are extensions of past executive orders. So with all that being said, how do you feel about the fact that he's pausing some of these orders for 60 days to review?
I don't think he needed to pause it. I think he could have changed it if it didn't work. But I think he should have given it a chance to work. I mean, the heart of the order is in the right place. And if these companies come and show, look, you know, we're losing money, we're losing 10%, and then maybe like they've done, they do this in other drugs. They say you can sell the drug plus 10%. So yeah, they could do it in this way. Yes, you can sell insulin plus 10% in order to give it basically as low a price as possible.
Right, and just to cover some of those overhead costs that come with the transaction. So this is a hard one. I don't feel like I know enough about this one to have a strong opinion. But I think there's some good, some bad, some totally irrelevant executive orders coming down. We just picked a few. If there are some that you'd specifically like to hear us break down, go ahead and reach out to us on social media at Tragos Law. Hopefully you guys learned something today. Hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll be back with you next time.